You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright.
That Hall of Fame agility right there that I hear so much about. Good morning. Good to see you.
Great morning. If you only caught 3 hours of our three-hour show yesterday, you may have heard about a small NBA trade that went down. You two probably did. You were sitting right next to me. Kawhi Leonard is now a Raptor. DeMar DeRozan is now a Spur. And LeBron is still a Laker. So let's get right to the fallout this morning from that big trade.
Jenna, why are you breathing so hard, sweetie?
I'm actually not. I don't know what you're talking about. Trade nobody would have predicted 6 months ago. Kawhi's camp has let it be known he only wants to play in Los Angeles, a place where Toronto isn't. But Adrian Wojnarowski is now reporting Kawhi is starting to warm up to the idea of playing for the Raptors, while conflicting reports have him potentially sitting out for the season. CeCe, I'll start with you. Is it possible Kawhi could actually sit out this coming season?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I haven't heard anything. And talking to his people, that hasn't been part of the conversation. But now it is a critical point as far as Kawhi. And it becomes very, very hard when you're a public figure or professional athlete and you're trying to do something and you don't have a speaking role in it. Now, I know for Kawhi, Kawhi's a very quiet guy. I've been able to deliver some of the stuff that his group, you know, that they thought was very, very important. But now he's been traded.
Let me just listen. Kawhi's people have been judicious with who they've talked to, and they've relied on those people. Chris Carter, I think it's fair to say, has been one of them, to make sure their stance and their message got out there. And that is not terribly unique. We've seen guys do that in the past. But what you're saying is at some point, the person that everyone is talking about has to do some of the talking.
Right. And I think it's for Kawhi, he's never going to be that type of figure as far as an athlete who's going to respond and be a part of the media on a regular basis. But as one of the best players in the world, to me, it's time to start talking about basketball. And them start talking about USA basketball last week, that kind of started the conversation. And also, I believe that kind of forced Toronto to put pressure on San Antonio to make this trade. Because if they don't do this trade and Kawhi goes out next week for USA basketball and people see that he's 100%, the chance of him end up in Toronto are very, very slim.
Then all of a sudden other teams might make better offers than they'd currently been making.
Because they see, wow, okay, he is still one of the top five, six players in the world. Let's make a deal. Let's give them some young players. Let's give them some assets. Let's give them one first-round pick. That'd be one more than what they provided to San Antonio. So I believe now it's time to start talking about playing basketball. Now is not the time to start talking about sitting out, because now you're talking about a player that would have played 9 games in 2 years. I don't think that's the type of message that Kawhi and his group want to be out there, nor do I think Kawhi as a person, he doesn't want people to start looking him in that
Wait,
light.
Do you mean it's now time for Kawhi to start talking about playing basketball?
Yes.
Yes,
that,
absolutely.
Kawhi Leonard coming to a microphone
Kawhi's
who we haven't heard from
some
in a
point,
while.
Yes, that's the exact point. That Kawhi's got to speak. Listen, he's never going to be, to C's point, a guy that does social media, a guy that does a ton of commentary. But he could, whether come to a microphone or release a statement, something that has his name on it, would, or to be totally honest, or if the uncle or the agent want to speak publicly. Like but I think it's best coming from Kawhi. But so how did we get here? Because there was discussion, and the Sporting News report yesterday, I think it's just maybe a little day behind, we're saying still discussion, will Kawhi even report to the Raptors? That was a possibility that we had broached on this show. If he wasn't traded to the Lakers, would he go? Listen, I believe Kawhi and his folks were trying to exert maximum leverage to get what they wanted, which was a trade to the city of Los Angeles. But once that doesn't happen, then you have to have the conversation. All right, how far are we actually going to take this? It's one thing to put out there, hey, you can trade for me. I might not show up. It's another thing to be traded for. And no, and the NBA is different than the NFL. There are no holdouts. You hold out for more than 30 days in the NBA,
yes.
Your contract, you don't become a free agent. Your contract does not toll. Like, that is the one downside to the guaranteed contracts, right?
And it was very clear to me yesterday early in the process, because Kawhi and his people, they were keeping up with it just like us. San Antonio decided, probably for a number of different reasons, they weren't going to communicate with Kawhi and his group. They were going to make this trade. Kawhi's group did ask for permission to talk to other teams along this process. San Antonio did not grant them that. So San Antonio went and made what they thought was the best deal possible before time really started not being their friend.
And so, listen, wherever Kawhi was traded, I felt it was almost a certainty he was going to play this year, or at least going to report to them, and then maybe they flip him at some point during the year, because he didn't really have good options here. One is to hold out, which would be unprecedented for a player of his caliber and would not get him to Los Angeles quicker because he wouldn't become a free agent. The other one would be to say, my quad still ain't right. But if that's the case, well, like, then all of a sudden, you're 2 years removed from playing basketball. Then all of a sudden, even the Lakers, teams that want you, would say, well, can a guy that has that bad, suffered a left quad injury or the opposite quad injury in 2012, suffered this injury in 2016, and then it cost him 2018, and now if it's costing him some of 2019, we start to say, hold on, like, is this guy going to ever be the player he was? And people have to remember the player that he was. In one of my first appearances ever with Colin Cowherd a couple years ago, I said I thought Kawhi Leonard was the sixth best player in the league, and I got killed for underrating him. Kawhi Leonard was, his last two healthy years, first team All-NBA at forward, ahead of Kevin Durant, his last two.
I don't think people are aware of that, or they just are just not trying to look at the facts.
Kawhi Leonard in back-to-back seasons finished ahead of LeBron James in MVP voting. When I said he was the sixth best player, I was pushing back against the idea that he was already the second best player, which is what the discussion was. The last time Kawhi was healthy, the discussion was, is Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry the second best player in basketball? And so, that is how good he was the last time he was healthy. We're saying he's sixth, fifth or sixth was underrating him. That's where he was in 2017, really, until the Zaza injury with the ankle.
Although the news that was going to break before, that was going to happen before all this came out, was the fact that he was preparing to play for Team USA,
yes.
And the assumption that he was healthy enough to do that. But I want to go back to something else you said earlier. If a player holds out for 30 days or sits out for 30 days, they don't become a free agent?
Correct.
Like, so
you can't sit out the last year of your contract and become a free agent.
So I would assume Kawhi knows this.
No, they know this.
So why would that even be on the table as
I don't think it is on the table.
It's not on the table for them.
Oh, okay.
This is just someone reporting potentially this.
So I think that's important to get out there, that even if he sat out, he wouldn't all of a sudden be able to then go to the
people that follow the NBA, this is a talking point that they know about. People that don't follow the NBA and are just talking, they don't know what they're talking about. Kawhi and his group are well aware of what the rules and everything are. And they know that now that he's been traded, there's a certain amount of limitations, a certain number of limitations that come with being traded.
I think there was an element of, I would say, overstating how far they would take this in an attempt to cool the market. And by the way, I think they cooled the market in Boston. I think they cooled the market in Philly.
We know they cooled the market based on what they fetched in the trade.
And so it was, I get the move. I get the idea, and you said it the other day, C, that if you are dead set on getting somewhere, that using everything at your disposal, be it leaking that you might not show up, talking about these things, doing all of that. But the universe changed for Kawhi Leonard the moment this trade went through.
Yes.
And then it's not about a threat to do something anymore. It's about, are you going to do it? And he had to realize, okay, I'd be sacrificing $20 million. I wouldn't be a free agent. People would start to, I'm a guy that doesn't love.
How would it improve his position?
Right. And so I don't, he will, unless the Raptors trade him on their own volition, the next basketball game Kawhi Leonard plays will be in that jersey that you're seeing right behind us.
So really quickly, what are his options at this point? As angry as he is or as frustrated as he and his camp are, he's got to show up in Toronto at this point, unless Toronto wants to make a deal with another team. That's basically his only option.
Yeah, right? For the first 30, 60 days of it, yeah, that's his only option. It's not as if they thought they had a bunch of other options. First of all, I think for us to think that Kawhi and them don't understand what's going on, that would be naive.
Of course.
All right? They know exactly what's going on. They know what their options are. And that's why I think it's very, very important at this point that Kawhi, because what I would do, this is not Kawhi, this is not Kawhi's camp. What I would do is have a press release. I would issue a statement as far as I'm excited to play this next season of basketball in Toronto, because that would kill a lot of the things that are being rumored going on. And after that, I wouldn't answer any more questions about free agency. I'll address free agency at the end of the season. I don't care game 42, game 62. That's what I would do. And once you release that statement, people can't force you to make a comment. Kawhi doesn't want to be, on the NBA beat every day. But if you release a statement and say something, that's what you're able to alleviate.
All right, we'll talk a lot more about this coming up. On the other side, though, a 7-time Pro Bowler and Super Bowl champ is hanging up his spikes. That's next. This is First Things First. Back here at First Things First, we are going viral. Yesterday, Manny Machado was traded from the Baltimore Orioles to the Dodgers. Dodger fans, not surprisingly, excited to get one of the best players in baseball. Check out this reaction from Manny's new teammates, Justin Turner and Alex Wood.
It's done.
Yeah, we got Manny, baby.
Obviously, a little backstory there. Somebody had a phone on them for 48 straight hours.
I was going to say, do we think that was a little,
any day now,
little scripted?
Going to happen.
That I feel like that was a little
but
staged.
Didn't you feel like if it was scripted, they would have done like a backflip over the boat?
That's got to be staged, right?
Yeah. Jenna, you got to call the people and help them out. You know how to stage a video and everything.
Are you kidding? That's all I do.
Yeah, that's what they need a little help.
Right? That's what I said.
Yeah.
Double backflip, inverted, into the water. You're on a boat.
Help them out. Send them a little notes, couple notes and everything, how to do it.
Or just have it like act as if you're filming someone doing something and they're in the background and they just found out.
Right.
Not a perfectly still camera on them. But listen, on a baseball note, this is a great acquisition for the Dodgers, man. They go to the top of the NL favorites to me for the World Series.
Man, forget about the baseball note, man. Homeboy's leaving Baltimore to that right there.
Right.
Okay? On my off days, what are we going to be doing? That water looked blue. It didn't look brown. That water looked blue, okay? My off days. That right there, that's the deal right there.
That's a great point.
Baltimore to L.A.
That's a great point. That is an upgrade in lifestyle.
Yeah.
All right, on to the NFL now. He spent close to a decade as one of the league's top cornerbacks, and apparently that was enough for Darrelle Revis. The 7-time Pro Bowler and Super Bowl champ announced his retirement yesterday. Revis Island is officially deserted. Playing for 4 teams over 11 seasons, Revis set the benchmark for corners in the NFL. See, how are you going to remember Darrelle Revis's career?
Oh, he definitely won the greats. One day I expect him to get a gold jacket. And I'm not a person that likes to conversate about the Hall of Fame because I know it's a really, really, really exclusive class to be in. But he's one of those people that you're not trying to just get into the conversation. He's going to be a Hall of Famer because he changed the game. In an era where it is the most pass-friendly and the easiest to be able to throw and catch the football, he was still able to thrive. Defensive coordinators were able to look at a guy like him and several others. So if you want to compare him, who would he be compared to in his era? Champ Bailey, Ty Law. Ty Law is on the Hall of Fame ballot now. Charles Woodson will be on the Hall of Fame ballot when he's eligible. But that's what he provides a luxury for defensive coordinators that regardless of what the rules, no, you can't touch a guy beyond 5 yards. But if you want to still play that cat coverage, people say, man, what is cat coverage? Never heard of it. That's where you got a guy. I'm bad enough to be able to shut that cat down no matter where he goes. In the slot, goes outside. That's what Revis. I hope that. Not like Deion Sanders, because he was different. He was far more physical, and people consider him to be a little bit better tackler. I hope people look at how smart he was as a football player, how he could recognize the routes after 10 yards, what the wide receiver could do, what their limitations, what they couldn't do. And he maximized the business part of pro football, not like a lot of people that we've seen. He got maximum leverage on him playing man-to-man, knowing that people needed that, and he maximized the dollars.
See,
I mean, he charged for his services.
He made $124 million in 145 games. He was about $1 million a game player. In a league that pays nobody like that.
How?
Unless you're a quarterback. Well, because he was one of the few guys. That's
well, for one, he was a top pick. You have to be a top pick to be able to leverage that.
A top pick in the old salary structure. So
yes.
he comes in with a super high salary already. But we've seen a lot of top picks that turned into star players that didn't have the stomach. Or it just wasn't who they were.
Or the business savvy.
Right. Or the business savvy. Is it his uncle or his godfather was running for NFLPA president at one point? And so, like, he had some background there.
Sean Gilbert.
Thank you. That he would treat the teams the way teams treat players. Oh, okay. I have the leverage. I am going to exert it to its maximum possible potential. I am not going to act like this is a family or like loyalty has to be. No, this is a business, a dangerous business, and a business that if my skills deteriorate, you will cut me or ask me to take a pay cut. So as long as you have to have me, you will have to pay me accordingly. And why was he able to have that type of leverage? Look at what he let defenses do in the prime of his career. Just look at that picture. When you have 35% of the field covered by one guy, you talk about football being a numbers game all the time, see? Mm-hmm. How hard is it for the offense to find space to work on that bottom two-thirds of the field in that picture? People think the shutdown corner, it's about taking away the number one wide receiver. That's part of it. But it's also about making everyone else's job on the defense that much easier, right?
Yeah, because and especially the other corner.
The other corner always has help over the top. I don't think you can. He didn't play as long as some of the all-time great defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
But Revis at his peak was as good as anyone I've seen short of Deion Sanders. I'm not saying he's better than everyone short of Deion, but he was at his best. He played the position.
I mean, there's a group of guys, too, that, you know, in all respect to what you've seen.
Sure.
I mean, but when I've played against people, Rod Woodson, Darryl Green, Aeneas Williams, all these guys are, I believe, to be better than him and for a longer period of time.
Aeneas Williams came up in the morning meeting today, and I said Aeneas Williams had, basically double the length of his career. Rod Woodson played far longer than him, and both those guys, if I'm not mistaken, showed the ability to play at a super high level at corner and safety.
Like, yes.
They transitioned to that later in their career. So it's hard to compare the totality because they did it so much longer. I just don't know how you could play the position much better than he played it while he was the first team All-Pro 4 times, I think 7-time Pro Bowler.
What did he do that other corners didn't? Why was he so dominant?
The reason why, because he could play very, very good bump and run and not get called for pass interference. He was also very, very physical enough that if you decide to try to run the ball, he was not a liability to the defense. But what it allows people to do is allows the defensive coordinator, Eric Mangini, to have far more flexibility in the things that you can do defensively. When he can blanket one side of the field, it takes away the confidence of the quarterback and it puts a lot lot of pressure on the other guys on the offense to be able to produce. So Darrell Revis and the ability to be able to play man-to-man all over the field, even though they changed the rules and everything. I just thought, he was a very, very smart football player and underrated how physical he played.
And underrated what an amazing athlete he was coming out of college. If you look like his spark scores at the combine, those sub 4.440, 90-plus percentile in all the shuttle and the cone drills. So he also had all of the physical tools. And, like, if we're talking about this era of NFL football, just take the 2000s, I think you make a strong case the two most individually dominant defensive seasons that we've seen a player have was J.J. Watt's first defensive player of the year season. He's got three of them. That first one, or I think it was 21 sacks. He had another 20-plus tackles for a loss in the backfield. He was the best run stopper and pass rusher, arguably, in football that year. And that 09 Revis season. I mean, they threw at him 108 times for a 36.8 quarterback rating over the course of the season. Later on, they stopped throwing him so much. That season, they were targeting him. He was still a relatively young player. Yes. And he shut it all down. And people will remember the money. I mean, the highest paid secondary player in the history of the league and one of the highest paid non-quarterbacks in the history of the league.
Yeah, and people might not like the way he went about it because he was basically, you can rent my services.
Mercenary.
Yeah, if you want this, like, you can get it. It's going to cost you a lot of money. But I like the fact that even later in his career with all the stats, he decides to go to Bill Belichick, sit under his tutelage, and win him a championship.
All right, Darrell Revis retiring after 11 seasons in the NFL. Coming up on the other side, does Kawhi Leonard already have his eyes set on LeBron and the Lakers? That's next. This is First Things First. Tomorrow, Big 3 Basketball is live from Miami. Catch it all on FS1 at 8 Eastern or stream it live on the Fox Sports app. Back here on First Things First, we're going viral. Tiger Woods is in Carnoustie for the Open Championship, the British Open, seeking his 15th major win. That inspired this pretty funny parody from comedian Connor Moore. Take a listen.
Tiger, can we get a quick couple of words off you?
Yeah.
How are you feeling coming into the Open?
Well, conditions are tough, man. But, I think I'm putting well. Really do. And my back feels good. And, yeah, I feel good, man.
Could you elaborate on that, Tiger?
Well, I think I'm putting really well, and conditions are really tough. But, yeah, my back feels really good, and I feel good, man. Really good.
Thanks, Tiger.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Another bombshell there from Tiger Woods.
Yeah, y'all got me stoked, you know, to play in the Open Champ. You know, to play in the Open Champ. Sorry. Little Bubba Watts, back there, Florida. Can play in the Open Champ.
That was pretty good.
Both of them. Both
only
of
thing,
them.
Connor Moore, that's the old Tiger Woods. The new Tiger Woods, Jenna, you, man, he's got all kind
he's
of
like,
comments.
Yeah, and then this, the, what I'm feeling
a little
mostly
more gregarious.
And then, the feelings I have, let me just emote a little bit more. I mean.
And then when he leaves the interview, he always says the person's name. Well, thank you, Jenna. Thank you for taking time.
I mean, I love the new Tiger.
And the Bubba Watson, that was.
Crying from the Masters.
The Masters, yes. When he won the championship. Yes. That's really good. That was really
that was good stuff.
And the Tiger Woods voice was pretty, if you closed your eyes, is pretty spot on.
All right, so stories to start your morning now. Manny Machado headed to Hollywood. The four-time All-Star was traded from the Orioles to the Dodgers for five prospects.
Damn.
Machado joins a first-place team that will be looking to make a playoff push. Nick, does Machado make the Dodgers World Series favorites now?
He makes them the favorites to make the World Series out of the National League. In my eyes.
Over Houston. I mean,
not to win the World Series. Okay. That's why I'm saying.
Okay, yeah.
Because I think the three best teams in baseball are still all in the American League.
Yes.
In the Red Sox, Houston, and the Yankees.
Okay, all right.
But I think this jumps.
I was getting ready to get fired up.
No,
now.
I know.
Hey, listen now.
This jumps them ahead of the Cubs, ahead of the Nationals, and I think it makes them clearly the best team in the NL West where they only have a half game.
That is one of the good storylines. What I like about it is the potential that he's going to be with the Dodgers for a long time. That's what I'd like to see. You know, this one-year hire thing, or is it going to put them in the pennant race? But, yeah, Dodgers baseball and Dodger fans should be happy for a long time to come.
All right, moving on to college football. When Nick Saban benched Jalen Hurts for Tua Tagovailoa in the national championship, a quarterback battle was born. Hurts has been rumored to possibly transfer this season, but Saban said, quote, "I expect him to be there." See, how do you see the Alabama quarterback battle playing out?
Oh, Jalen Hurts, you got to go, man.
Yeah.
Did you watch that national championship game? You see that kid throw the ball? You see them look off that safety, look him down the middle and throw it up the sideline? Man, you got to go. Jalen Hurt is only a college quarterback. This is his pro football. Unless he decides to play in the CFL or something like that, he is not a pro prospect. So you need to play as much as possible. You can't sit there and be a backup. I typically tell my kids, because I got a lot of kids playing college and have been in a situation like this, if the guy in front of you, they moved in front of you, if he's a pro, you need to leave. If he's not a pro, you need to stay there and try to beat him out.
Especially when the guy they moved in front of you is also younger than you.
Absolutely.
So it's not like, okay, let me just wait for him to graduate. I'll get one more year.
No.
That's how this is going to work. Listen, there's no disrespect to him, but he absolutely should transfer for all the reasons you said. The guy's better than him and younger than him. I wonder if Lane Kiffin would have a spot for him at FIU. I wonder if that would be something that would be intriguing to him there if he wants to transfer. What, see?
I'm sure Lane has his number.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure there's been some communication.
Maybe a little texting.
Nick Saban might not know, yeah, but Lane Kiffin know.
Yeah, absolutely.
LeBron James has owned the NBA since he entered the league 15 seasons ago. Now the King wants to literally own a team. LeBron's business partner, Maverick Carter, said LeBron wants to own an NBA franchise and possibly an NFL one as well. Nick, you think LeBron would be a good owner, team owner?
Real quick, did I say FIU? If I did, I meant FAU.
FAU.
With Lane Kiffin. My apologies.
No, you're good.
Listen, I wouldn't, if I was LeBron, I wouldn't try to get into the NFL ownership business. But the NBA ownership business, absolutely. Not because one business is better than the other, but stick with what you know. Stick with where you're comfortable and where you already have relationships. Like, if buying an NFL franchise would be just, to me, him getting involved in any industry that he doesn't have a lot of familiarity with. But could he be a great NBA owner? Could he have some allure like Michael Jordan, I at least thought he would have when he bought a team? Absolutely. And LeBron's talked about this for a long time, of trying to stack as much money as possible to potentially one day maybe buy the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, and we've talked to the people close to LeBron. This is not something new. This has been something that he's been thinking about building for a long, long time. And he owns a part of an international soccer team. Yeah. So that's already football in a sense right there. I disagree with you as far as he don't know the NFL. Neither does Jerry Jones. Neither does Robert Kraft. None of them know the NFL. But the NFL and the numbers, the multiples that these franchises are going for, it's a better buy for your money long term than the NBA franchises. So I believe both of them are very good options for LBJ.
All right, moving on. Carmelo Anthony's one-year experiment in Oklahoma City could be over. Reports are that the Thunder and Hawks are in trade talks centered around Melo and Dennis Schroeder. Nick, would this be a good trade for both teams?
Well, listen, the Hawks are just trying to get off Schroeder's contract, so they would be trading him and then buying out Melo. I would applaud the Oklahoma City Thunder if they did this. Here's why. They would, that luxury tax hell we're talking about them being in, if they bring salary in for Melo, then they stay in that to a degree. Like, they would be paying, if you include the luxury tax, close to $50 million for the opportunity to have Dennis Schroeder on the team. But he would make them better. He would give them another rotation piece. You'd have a good backup point guard. And then Melo would be free to sign anywhere. So I would really like this move for OKC if the owner doesn't mind cutting that check.
And then Melo, is he going to get bought out?
Melo gets bought out by Atlanta and goes wherever he wants. Exactly, yes.
I mean, I try to tell you, man, it's not a bad deal getting bought out. That's not a bad day. Like, you keep saying, oh, this is humiliating. Oh, OKC's not going to buy you out. Maybe Atlanta's going to buy you out. Like, but somebody's going to give you a bag of money. So everything's good for Melo. He's making money.
All right, if you're an NBA super team and you've won 3 out of 4 titles and you've got 4 All-Stars in your starting lineup and then you add another 4-time All-Star, let's just say you can rub NBA fans the wrong way. Well, assume that super team is the Warriors. They signed Boogie Cousins and people were rubbed. But that doesn't affect Boogie in the least. In fact, he kind of welcomes the haters.
I'm not going to put myself in an already bad situation and try to prove my value or my worth as a player in a situation that's not looking to win.
1-7-15, we're out of here.
I knew how it would be perceived from some.
Come on, one more. Awesome, and yes.
I didn't give a. I'm saying that now because I'm seeing the reaction, but I didn't give a. I knew what my ace was, and we made the call.
There's some motherfuckers out there that's probably ripping their hair out right now. And I love it.
Okay, that was a very dramatic interview. Yeah. It was the most dramatic interview I've ever seen in my entire life, and I applaud them. So Boogie Cousins says, I know what my ace was. I knew what my ace was. What was your reaction, CeCe, to his comments?
I mean, I'm not surprised. I know Boogie. So that's the reason why people don't want him. That's the reason why he's available. Because that type of attitude, like, you think you could build a franchise around Boogie Cousins? Like, no, you can't. Because they're going to be, sometimes you're going to interview him. He's going to be non-cooperating. There's going to be times he's going to get plenty of sound bites. But, man, he's not a winner. Last time he won was at Kentucky. So, saying his ace was Golden State, I don't see how this helps him that much. Like, he's not going to get beyond what people think about him by going to Golden State. So, he's still going to have to repair his image when he goes next year. So, I don't believe 1 year playing with the best basketball team that I've seen in a long, long time will repair Boogie Cousins' image.
All right, so I had a bunch of reactions to this, so I'll go through them quickly. One thing that he said that we didn't include there, he said this was my ace, then he said it was my nuclear option, and then he said it was his last resort. Well, it was not his last resort. Like, we do, it wasn't quite the first, but it was much closer to first than last. You called it a panic move when we first discussed it. It was like 5 a.m. on July 2nd when free agency opens midnight on July 1. He's calling Golden State. He's initiating the conversations. So I don't think it's fair for him to call it a last resort. I think pro athletes, NBA guys in particular, have to walk something of a fine line here. Because everyone has the right to do what they want and what makes them happy and to work where they choose when they're a free agent. I get that. But the almost thumbing your nose at what I would say is the majority of fans that saw this and were like, you got to be kidding me. And saying, I don't give a bleep. I love that they were pulling their hair out. That to me, there is a bit of a partnership between the pro athlete and the fan. And I understand
you. All athletes don't know that, nor do they care about that, because they think they are going to get paid regardless.
Right. And so in the current model, you will get paid regardless. But one of the reasons the salaries are as high as they are, and I do not begrudge pro athletes for a dollar they make, I got no problem with it at all, but it's because of the fan interest. Like, yes, you have to have super high skill. You've got to be. But there's amazingly accomplished high hurdlers that practice just as hard as NBA guys, but the fan interest isn't there in that to give them the salaries. And when you almost revel in the fact that, it'd be one thing if you're just reveling in the fact that other guys across the league don't like it, but players tend to support other players. That to me is a statement about the fans. Like, I love that they're pulling their hair out. I don't love that. Like, you're allowed to do whatever you want. And if Boogie thought this was the best move for his career, if he disagrees with Chris, he's like, I can go win, I can get healthy, I can take my time, and then go get a max contract, so be it. Like, it is not my place to tell him he's not allowed to do that. But to have a little bit of grace for the fans of, I don't know, pick a team, Miami's head, Orlando, that's like, man, we were already lapped in the field in this. If you came here, you're immediately our best guy. You go there and, like, that part to me, I think you got to be careful with that. I do think we got to remember the fans are a big part of this equation, and you can't make your free agency decision based on what the fans want you to do, but there's a level of empathy, or at least you could be cognizant of it in your comments after you make your free agency decision.
So much of what we're talking about is whether he could change the persona, this reputation that he's had, to now go play a year in Golden State, change that reputation, be the guy everyone wants you to be, stay healthy, and then go get your max deal. But this kind of stuff lends you to believe that maybe he isn't really the changed guy that we think he is. This quick reactionary, screw the world, like, I'm going to do my own thing. Are you worried that that's going to bleed into his time in Golden State?
Well, that's always a situation, especially when he's not on the court. And if he has some type of setback, if he's challenged as far as his rehab, I mean, this is his personality. I mean, you guys think when you're under stress or duress, I mean, your personality, it comes out. So I don't expect, you know, this huge change in personality, because for the next 5-6 months, this is all you ain't gonna see him on the court. It's all you're gonna hear. Like, this is all that he can do. Now he's got to try to defend his decision. Now, he thinks he wants to be the villain, but most players that I know and have encountered, they don't, man. They play the game because they love the game, but also the roar of the crowd, that roar is for you, not against you. So just be careful in trying to invite all these people. Like, oh, yeah, bring it on. I can take it. There's not a lot of athletes who I know that thrive being the villain.
And very few NBA guys. Very few. I'll say it for you because I know you get the, like,
yeah,
I
think, y'all not the toughest guys in the
listen,
world, okay?
Like, Draymond, I think, actually thrives in that role. But we saw KD try to do it. And KD was getting ejected and kind of losing himself a little bit.
LeBron tried admitted to do it.
LeBron, absolutely right. That the first year in Miami, all right, I'll wear the black hat. And he hated it. And it, by the way, I think contributed at least in part to what was the lowest moment of his career, that series against the Mavericks, where it all felt like it was coming down on him. Like, it is, there are some guys, I think Steven Jackson would have been fine being the villain. There are certain guys that are built for it. Most NBA guys are not. They like I think most people do, being loved. Like, he'd rather be loved than be hated in most aspects of life.
This is the thing about Steven Jackson. He wouldn't mind being the villain, but he wants to be respected.
Yeah.
All right? And when you keep making comments that don't make sense, it's hard for me to respect you. And you haven't won nothing. And after you, if you win with Golden State, you're not, oh, Golden State won because of Boogie? No, man, you joined a winner.
All right, let's move on now. Back to our top story. When Kawhi Leonard was traded to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan yesterday, we thought the drama was finally over. All right, we didn't. But for sake of the segment, just follow me here. The question now becomes, will he or won't he play next season? More drama. And now this. In a recent story by ESPN Zach Lowe, Toronto could trade Kawhi to the Lakers if it doesn't work out with the Raptors. Chris, should the Lakers still pursue Kawhi this season? Is that still on the table?
Yeah, they should try to pursue him because if you look at what's going on in Toronto, yeah, Toronto, for their fans' sake, they got one more year, all right? The ownership in Toronto decided we don't want to pay the luxury tax, so DeMar DeRozan, that's what they were. They dumped his salary. They did not want to be on the hook. So it was inviting to them to have Kawhi for 1 year. So they can kind of trick their fans to think, yeah, we're still competing for a championship. We can make that appearance in the final that we've never made. But after this, I mean, they're going to blow that thing up. They got other people coming off the books and everything for next year. Yes, I think Kawhi and his group still know that a trade can be made. They know there's a certain amount of time that has to pass before a trade can be made. But yes, a deal can still be done. But Kawhi, what he's got to do, it doesn't change. He's got to get on the basketball court. He's got to show people that he's healthy and show people he's still that low-maintenance star that 12 months ago, that's what we were basically talking about. Man, Kawhi, if he hadn't gotten hurt in the playoffs, that might have changed that series between San Antonio and Golden State. So Kawhi, what he's got to do, it does not change. But a deal with the Lakers, yes, can still be made.
And the Lakers should continually probe this. Magic should continually be just checking in with Masai Ujiri, the GM of the Raptors, and say, all right, so where are we at? How are you guys feeling? Now, I don't think a deal's going to be done. I don't think it's going to get close to being done because I think this, for this season, is going to work out beautifully for Toronto. I think Toronto now, with that Danny Green was thrown into the trade as an expiring contract, he will be the starting two guard for the Raptors. I think a lineup of Lowry, Green, Kawhi, Ibaka, who I don't have a ton of faith in, and Valanciunas, plus the fully formed bench unit that we talked about last year, I think that is a dangerous team. I do not think the Raptors would trade Kawhi at the deadline, or Zach Lowe writes around Thanksgiving leading up to the deadline a couple months before, if they are playing as well as I believe they will, but I've been wrong before. And maybe the biggest Celtics optimists will be proven right. Maybe it can go great in Toronto, but the Celtics are going to be a 65-win juggernaut out east. And Toronto's going to say, you know what? It's going well, but he is leaving in a year. We're not better than Boston. Can we get Brandon Ingram? I don't think that will come to pass, but things happen in the NBA. Kyle Lowry's a 32-year-old I think he's 32, 32-year-old six-foot point guard. Like, Kyle Lowry all of a sudden could start to seriously deteriorate. And they could say, even with Kawhi playing well, we're not great. I think it would take Toronto to be disappointing for this to be on the board. But that's one of the reasons Toronto can make this trade, is because if it doesn't work out, they can still recoup a lot of the value they traded away for Kawhi.
When you say things like, if it doesn't work out, would it not work out because Kawhi's heart isn't in it because he's still a little bit injured because he's not having chemistry with the other players because the Raptors aren't winning. Pick a reason why.
I think it would just be because the team's not good enough. Like I personally believe Kawhi Leonard's healthy at this point. I also think he's without question one of the six best players in the league. And I think his game transitions to every system, everywhere.
And his game transition, whether or not his heart's into playing in Toronto.
Oh, I don't think he's – I think his heart's into playing basketball.
Okay.
We need to stop asking that question. Is Kawhi's heart into basketball? You heard Greg Popovich yesterday. Said, Kawhi, it's all about basketball. That's all he wants to do is play basketball.
No, I agree. I didn't know if his heart was in Toronto because he definitely has not wanted to go anywhere other than L.A.
It doesn't matter if his heart's not there. He don't have options. From a legal standpoint, what can he do?
No, he would still play. But does it affect your play when you don't want to be somewhere?
No, there's $20 million on it. Okay. There's 20 million reasons why to get up and go to work. Like professional, you don't see guys turn down money. You hear a bunch of chatter. Oh, I'm getting ready to sit out. I'm getting ready to hold out. I'm getting ready. When they start issuing them checks, which you see NFL players and NBA players, you see them at work. And we can't think that Kawhi won't be motivated. He is not that type of person.
I'll bring up a Raptor who I think was a guy that did exactly what Jenna's talking about. Vince Carter on his way out. Vince Carter was so sick of being in Toronto after signing an extension there that he started not playing hard. This is documented.
That's
started
what I'm
not
asking.
Playing hard.
Vince
in
Carter
order to,
and Kawhi, we shouldn't mention them in the same.
Okay, right.
Like,
No.
Because it's just not fair.
No, absolutely. That's where. But just let me get there. The point that I'm trying to make is we have seen, even though it's rare, we have seen guys tank it, essentially. You guys, I don't want to be here. You won't trade me. I'm going to give you 50% effort until you trade me. Vince did that in Toronto. They traded him in the Nets, and he instantly went back to being Vince Carter. That isn't in Kawhi's basketball DNA. And that's what Pop was talking about yesterday. When Pop did the interview and he said he was a great teammate, it wasn't about the max contract. All Kawhi wants to do is play basketball. It is to me not on the board that Kawhi Leonard is going to play a basketball game and not give it all out. That's not who he is as a player. And that's, by the way, the biggest indictment on Vince's whole career was that he tanked that half season in Toronto, because that is outside of the DNA of most elite pro athletes.
All right, let's break there. Coming up, has the Legion of Boom finally been put to bed? Next, first things first. When the Seahawks won the Super Bowl in 2014 behind the Legion of Boom, the sky was the limit. But fast forward to 2018, and Seattle is suddenly the Legion of Fairly Average. Only six players remain from the 22 that started in that Super Bowl. One of them, Doug Baldwin, said that, yeah, they miss the veteran leaders on the team, but, quote, there are still guys who can step up and fill that void. See, let's talk about this from the quarterback Russell Wilson's vantage point. Does his job change with all the other changes on the team? Does he have to sort of change his outlook and the way he plays?
Yeah, the franchise has changed. John Schneider, the general manager, does a tremendous job from a personnel standpoint, not only through street free agents, but low-round draft picks, him and Pete Carroll. I think they run one of the best player development programs where you can see guys that maybe necessarily under the radar, and they get good stuff from them. They fit their system. They fit into their locker room. So in doing that, John Schneider's job has changed. Pete Carroll's job has changed. They put more resources and money into the offense, and how they play football is going to be different. When they, in their prime, they were a dominant top five defensive team. Turn you over a bunch, hard to convert third down, very, very physical, get after the passer. Now, with these guys being transitioned, with Earl Thomas being the only one there, Cam Chancellor in retirement, Richard Sherman down in the Bay playing, they got to play a different style. You cannot play as much man-to-man or even cover three from a press bail that they made famous there in the NFL. You can't play that unless you have the personnel. And with the resources on offense, their wide receiving core is significantly better. Their quarterback is a franchise quarterback who you can drop back and throw the ball 40 times a game, regardless of his height. Russell Wilson is one of the best quarterbacks that we have in the NFL. And as he's developed, they've gotten away from their running game. Their offensive line, one of the worst in the NFL. So Russell has had to run for his life. When they had beast mode, and they had the offensive line, that was a lot better. They could be a lot more physical. Right now, as an offense, they're more of a finesse offense, and that's why Russell Wilson's numbers are what they are.
I mean, this will surprise some people. Russell Wilson last year led the NFL in touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. Number one, 34 touchdown passes. Also, if last year's...
You got to thank our intern for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. Last year,
smarter than Nick Wright.
Thank you. Last year, if you don't remember exactly the ebb and the flow of the season, through 13 weeks, through 12 games, the Seattle Seahawks were 8-4, coming off a victory over Philly, a Philly team, by the way, that still had Carson Wentz, and they were primed to make the playoffs once again, as they had in every year of Russell Wilson's career. They were, with 2 minutes left in week 17, they were in position to make the playoffs. Now, they miss a field goal. Atlanta beats Carolina. They end up missing out on the playoffs. But, like, they were a missed field goal at the gun in week 17 away from being a 10-win team again. How do they do that with the injuries they suffered last year, with the turnover, with the turmoil? It's because they have a superstar quarterback. That's not the only reason. Everything you're saying about roster construction is true. I think Pete Carroll's an excellent head coach. Like, I'm not saying he gets all of the credit, but he is, right now, this moment, one of the best players in this entire league. And the point Chris made, that you can drop him back and throw the ball 40 times, something that even quarterbacks with high passer ratings, guys with good numbers, guys like Dak Prescott his rookie year, you didn't believe you could. And last year, I think you were proven correct on that. You absolutely can do that with Russell Wilson. So, like, why do I have faith in Seattle that they'll be able to deal with the turnover? Because their two most important spots on the team, they have A or A-plus guys in Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. And if you got an in-your-prime quarterback and still a really quality coach and a GM that's going to fill the roster well, you should be in the discussion as a playoff contender every year, as they have been every year he's been there.
What is Seattle's priority right now? So you have your quarterback and you have your head coach. What should their priority be? Does it have to be shoring up that line?
It has to be shoring up the offensive line and having some type of running attack. If you look at the Rams, what the Rams present from a defensive standpoint, because they're going to make the playoffs, it'd be nice to win their division. I don't think they're going to win their division. So that NFC is stacked. So getting a wild card spot is going to be difficult. If that offensive line played a lot better, if they had better talent on the offensive line, then which would help the running game. So that helps Russell Wilson not only protect him, because there is none of the great quarterbacks we have in this league, none of them run for their life the way Russell Wilson does. None of them have to ad-lib. There is none of them that have to, one of Jenna's favorite terms, off-schedule. Man, their offense is off-schedule almost every play, and Russell makes it happen. So that's those areas right there would improve Seattle a great deal.
They tried to help Russell out with the running attack through the draft this year by taking Rashad Penny. We'll see what type of pro he is. But C's point about the offensive line, and listen, in the NFL, you gotta recognize who's in your division, because that's your not only best path to playoffs, but it's your only path to a home playoff game, is winning your division. We know the Rams have Aaron Donald. They added in Ndamukong Suh. But let's not forget two games against San Francisco. When people talk about San Francisco, it's all Jimmy Garoppolo. San Francisco has spent high draft picks on D linemen repeatedly. I think that's probably their biggest strength of their team as a whole, is the young blue chip guys they have on defensive line there. So that's a quarter of your schedule where you have guys up the middle that can get after your quarterback. And the only times in Russell Wilson's career he's been less than an A or A plus quarterback has been when he's been playing hurt. Why has he been hurt? Because they can't protect him. He's running around. He gets a twisted ankle. He hurts his leg, and he plays through it. Because the guy's, I don't know that he's ever missed a game in his career, but he's been dinged up throughout. And so that is something that's the X factor for Seattle. Can they keep Russell Wilson upright?
And he can't do it forever. He can't do it every game of the season. He can't spend every single game running
for
his life.
Which is what he had to do last year. Last year,
he's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
He's unbelievable.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is Kawhi Leonard on the verge of sitting out this season? That is next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by Yahoo Sports senior NBA writer Chris Mannix.
It's been too long.
We're already arguing about Boston.
What we should have done
is just
roll during the break instead of this.
We'll discuss that later in the show. We got other stuff to do right now. I was just getting you revved up.
The water in Philadelphia helps the younger players grow more than the water in Boston.
Save it for later.
That would be the conversation that you didn't hear, but now you are hearing. Chris, a week ago, if I asked you what city Kawhi wanted to to play in next season, you'd say?
Los Angeles.
That would be the one. That's because his camp let it be known Kawhi would only play in Los Angeles. Kawhi is going to Toronto. Adrian Wojnarowski is now reporting Kawhi is warming up to the idea of playing for the Raptors, while conflicting reports have him potentially sitting out for the season. So, Mannix, is it possible Kawhi would actually sit out this coming season?
Let me say this first. Kawhi needs to speak. Kawhi needs to have a press conference. Kawhi needs to do a sit-down interview. He needs to stop letting his representatives whisper in the ear of reporters and put this stuff out there. I think some of his representatives, which include a family member, are doing him kind of a disservice right now by creating this narrative. I mean, you look at some of the reports from the last couple of days, it's been largely the same language used. You know, no desire to play in Toronto, no intention of playing in Toronto. That may be true, but Kawhi needs to start talking, number one. I don't believe he'd sit out the season just because NBA players don't do that. You don't see NBA players holding out. You go back to Kyrie Irving a couple of years ago. Kyrie Irving, when he was trying to think of a way not to play for the Cavaliers, it didn't really register with him to hold out. What registered with him was, let's have surgery. Let's go under the knife and let's see what, if, and that'll put me on the shelf for a couple months. I'll make you paid by doing that. So I think no matter what Kawhi thinks of Toronto, no matter how he feels about being a Raptor, he's going to show up at training camp and he's going to play a full season.
Yeah, I know for a fact no one is telling Kawhi to sit out the season. People have said that, all these rumors, reports, but I talked to Kawhi, it's people, and that's not even part of the conversation, him sitting out. So I don't know why people are talking about it, because typically people aren't informed. So even that information is not coming from Kawhi's camp. Now, if Kawhi's objective was to get out of San Antonio, his camp did a good job for him because he's not part of San Antonio, that organization. If Kawhi's objective is to get to Los Angeles, they're still doing a good job because that is still on the board for him to get there. But I said exactly what the same thing that you said. At some point, as an athlete, you have to release a statement. You don't have to necessarily do a sit-down interview or anything, but release a statement, have a press release, and state a few things. One being, I'm going to play basketball this season, and I'm not going to answer questions about free agency, a lot like LeBron has done a number of times. You can ask how many different ways you want to, stack it however you want to. I'm not going to answer questions about my pending free agency until after the season, and having a press release would be able to do that.
Listen, I do think that Kawhi's people, prior to the trade, let anyone that they trusted, anyone that would listen, know all options are on the table. Like, anything and everything's on the table unless we get moved to Los Angeles. Unless we get moved to Los Angeles, you trade for Kawhi, okay, do it at your own risk. Maybe he won't show up. Maybe who knows how the physical is going to go. I think they made it clear all options are available. And then I think the world changed for them once the trade actually happened. Because the world did change for them once the trade actually happened. Now, it's one thing to bluff. It's one thing to act like you're going to really go all in on this. It's another thing to do what I would consider something that is not only borderline unprecedented for a player of his caliber in this league, but it would also undo what the image he had built, whatever that image was, I think was overwhelmingly positive in San Antonio for the entirety of his career until this saga started. I still think most of that image is intact. I think there are people that don't love the way he handled it, but Greg Popovich had an opportunity yesterday to crush Kawhi, and he went the other way. He said he was a great teammate. Mm-hmm. He said the folks like myself, he didn't name me, but I was one of them, who made a big deal about Kawhi not being on the bench. He said, listen, talking heads need to talk, but it was never an issue for us. All Kawhi wants to do is play basketball, and that's not only a ringing endorsement from his former coach, but from probably the league's most respected coach. So Kawhi can, if he does what you guys are recommending, it gets him back on track to being thought of as the guy that he was thought of 12 months ago.
A couple things. One, I think Pop took the high road. I do think it was an issue for him, Kawhi not being around the team. It was an issue for people in the organization, Kawhi not being around the team. It was a source of frustration. I mean, look, publicly, the players even said it, and I believe that the coaching staff and front office privately believed it behind the scenes. I agree with you, Chris. Like, if it's a press release, whatever it is, he needs to say something, but he needs to do it in a non-condescending type of way. Like, don't come out and say, I don't know where this stuff came from. We know where it's coming from. The idea that he might sit out the season, the people that are writing that are not making it up out of nowhere. What they're doing is taking stuff from the handful of people that are in Kawhi Leonard's orbit who are dropping those types of breadcrumbs, you know, to these reporters out there. So he's got to be out there and say, look, you know, things went wrong. Don't have to be that specific. You don't want to be. Things went south in San Antonio. I had my preferences, but now that I'm a Raptor, I'm going to give it my all there. And I'm excited about the possibility of playing for a team that could win the Eastern Conference.
Let's talk about that. If he does, should he join and sit and play with the Toronto Raptors this year? How could it be? Where could Toronto's ceiling be?
Ceiling is a championship. Frankly, I mean, that's a ceiling. I think that's a tough ceiling to achieve.
Eastern Conference championship?
No, I think the whole thing. I think you can if you're Toronto. Again, that's you said the ceiling. So, like, that's way up there. That's the least likely scenario. But this is not a team that I would say goes into a finals matchup and gets blown out. You can't when you have a guy like Kawhi. If you get to the finals, it means Kawhi Leonard's 100%. It means he's all the way back from that injury. And Kawhi Leonard is a former finals MVP. Kyle Lowry is still playing at all-star level. All those young guys on the team, we spent a lot of time on and off the air talking about young players and their development. They're not sexy names in Toronto, but OG Anunoby is a good player. Mm-hmm. Pascal Siakam is a good player.
And they kept all their great
They kept
players.
All those guys. That was a big part of this deal. They give up Jakob Poeltl, but they can live without Jakob Poeltl with Valanciunas still around. So if they get to the finals, I don't think they're a favorite, but I think they've got a puncher's chance of winning a championship.
Yeah, their biggest problem from a basketball strategy standpoint is their backcourt. How are they going to defend? Kyle Lowry at the point guard, Danny Green at the two. Those guys are not good perimeter defenders, and they will struggle defensively. Offensively and their bench, very, very good. They run the same type of offense, and you add Kawhi compared to that mid-range game that's almost obsolete in the NBA of DeMar DeRozan. I could see they're a very talented basketball team. They got a new coach. We don't know how he's going to respond, how they're going to respond to him. So for me, the biggest question is their backcourt. How are they going to defend?
I actually disagree with you there. I think Danny Green, now he kind of lost his ways last year in San Antonio. Danny Green was a very good 3-and-D guy.
Yeah,
But Danny Green is a defensive situational player. He's not a very, very good athlete. You have to play great help defense for him. Because he doesn't have the athleticism to be able to play on the perimeter.
That's fine. I actually think defense could be one of the strengths of Toronto. I think Kyle Lowry can dial in if his age does not become a big hurdle this year. It will at some point, but last year it wasn't. I think they got, obviously, adding Kawhi Leonard, you get much better defensively. I think I think their ceiling is just a step short of yours. I think their ceiling is they could win the East. Are they the favorites to win the East? No, but you could make the argument they have the best player in the conference. Like, I think it's Giannis. Some people think it's Kyrie. But he's certainly – DeRozan was not in the discussion. DeRozan was a tier beneath. DeRozan, it was like that Oladipo, like that tier. Now they have a guy who's in the discussion as best player in the conference. Maybe he's certainly the most accomplished player in the conference. And so now you can say, okay, we have a lineup of Lowry, Green, Kawhi, Ibaka, and Valanciunas. I don't love the front court, but I love those three perimeter guys. And we know how good the bench unit was. Like, that's a team that could present problems for teams throughout the league. Like, right now, are the Raptors one of the six best teams in the league? I would think so.
The front court actually is a weird asset for them in the Eastern Conference, because if you look back at the games they played against Boston, who would be their top competitor, they've been physical, and they've out-muscled Boston. That still remains a weakness of the Celtics. But the biggest question mark with Kyrie in Toronto, or not Kyrie, Kawhi in Toronto, is you mentioned the coach, Nick Nurse, a bit of an unknown, has not been an NBA head coach before, traveled the world, a lot of experience, highly respected guy, which is why he got this job. But Kawhi thrived in that Popovich system. They put him in the right places. They developed him organically within that structure. How does he operate in a Nick Nurse kind of free-flowing, three-point shooting offensive system? That's a bit of a question.
On the coaching thing, just quickly here, if you remember at the end of the year, I said I'd keep the coach and trade DeRozan. They didn't know they were going to be able to trade DeRozan. Certainly didn't know they'd be able to trade him for Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. I do wonder if Masai Ujiri in Toronto had to do it all over again. If they knew this trade was coming, if they would have kept Dwayne Casey.
Nah, they'd still fire. They'd still fire.
If they knew LeBron was leaving.
It doesn't matter. Okay. I think and this is a, I won't get too deep into the weeds on this one, but I think Masai Ujiri has been waiting for a long time to hire his own coach.
Yeah, I think he wants to be the figurehead of that organization.
Yeah, but he's also their best asset in keeping Kawhi Leonard long-term, a very engaging guy who I think is going to develop a strong relationship with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet a lot of money on that one, though. Mm.
In the other direction?
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.